Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hi Joe, how are you?
Hi, Bwana George. I am well.
Karibu sana for this podcast. It's been quite an exciting moment just to wait and to hear from you. So thank you for being available today.
No, George, thank you so much for having me. As you said, I know it's been a long time planning this and planning to be together on this conversation. So thank you for your patience as well. I think it's one of the leadership virtues that I see you espouse very well. So thank you for accommodating me.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. So just to kick us off, tell us who Joe G is.
So Joe Gashira is first of all a lover of God. I'm a born again Christian. I love the Lord, and I am a husband to one wife who is female. I thought it's important to mention some of these things nowadays.
Yes.
Yeah, and we have three kids. So Jewel, who is almost seven now, Kenya, who is five, going to six, and then our last born, Jari, who is 1.5 years old. So that's my clan. My wife is Betsy Wanjiru. Yeah, and that's from the family kind of setting. Then when it comes to career, I'm a trained accountant. So that's what I trained for. I did my BCom in accounting and did my CPAs. So I've practiced accounting and auditing and anything else around that, really financial consultancy and stuff like that. So that's what really I say would be my hard skill. But when it comes to my passion, I'm really passionate about leadership and entrepreneurship development, because I believe this is really the engine that would propagate creation of employment opportunities and really changing lives. And the thing about if I'm an entrepreneur today, or if I help somebody get a job, they not only are able to fend for themselves, but all the people who are actually dependents to them. So by opening the door for Joe, I'm actually opening the door for my wife and for my three kids as well. So for me, I see it being a ripple effect. And if we can do a lot of work in just making sure that we are raising more leaders in the corporate space and otherwise, and also entrepreneurs who actually go out there and implement their ingenious ideas to create something that can then provide opportunities for other people, then I think would be really contributing significantly to life as we know it. Yeah, so I'm very passionate about that. And in line with that, then we founded with a couple of friends Inuka Leadership Africa. And pretty much our vision there is to raise a generation of transformational leaders and entrepreneurs, right? And so how would it look like to have leaders and entrepreneurs, number one, who are integrous, so they do everything they do with virtue. They are very competent in what they do. And so, and this is really to debunk the myth that people in the church, you know, have the worst, you know, work ethic and the worst skill. I've had several people say we are not employing people from church, but we want to really change that and say, could we really have born again Christians who espouse skill, competence, talent, but they're also able to do what they need to do and still stand out. So when you're looking at Forbes, top 30 under 30, I want to see born again Christians there. So for me, I see that as being my place of contribution through Inuka and many other things that I do, which probably we will mention as we continue this conversation.
Thank you for talking about Inuka Leadership Africa. Yes. Just give us a little background, just how it started, the things it does, then currently, what's its performance?
So taking you back in when we were in campus, and of course, back then in 2007 is when the post-election violence happened, right? And the statistics to us were very glaring, because you'd be surprised that the people who are actually perpetrators of this violence, while you'd imagine it's some funny youth in Mathare, of course, there was that demographic, but there were still guys who had gone through high school and university and campus, and even some of them were in campus, and maybe they're on holiday. But then because they don't have anything meaningful that can actually, you know, make them utilize their skill to put something on the table, when the politicians come and say, we want you guys to do this for us, and they give you something menial, like maybe 500 shillings, for those listening from outside Kenya, maybe that's like $5. I mean, and you find yourself turning against somebody you know, somebody you've grown up with, just because somebody is giving you money. And for us, that was a really big problem. You're like, how can we make sure that we arm the youth in this country with the necessary skills and talent that they need in their hands to be able actually to monetize it, such that it doesn't matter who comes to me and says, this is how much I'm giving you to do this. Then you're stuck in your ways, and you're doing that with virtue and a lot of character. So that kind of thinking really was simmering during that time, especially of the post-election. Now, we were in Kenyatta University, and a group from ICC came and started a program. It was known as The Journey. And so The Journey was this campus fellowship where we used to fellowship. But that when this post-election crisis was just, simmering, and we were wondering what to do, they actually came up with a program known as Ascent. So Ascent is really a leadership program to see how do we tool the youth with the right kind of skill set to be able to engage with the world and the challenges that we face. And my co-founder, his name is Pete Karaoke. I think he definitely is one of the people you should have on this podcast. So between him and I, we were leaders at Ascent. I've been mentored by Juan Gibson and Duvate of ICC. And that conversation continued after campus. And after campus, Pete and I were like, okay, we are outside Ascent. What can we continue doing in the marketplace to still, because one of the things we were really challenged at Ascent is to see how then do these lessons we've learned find expressions in our spheres of influence beyond campus. And so by the help of Gibson and Duvate, who is really our patron, we launched Inuka in 2012, and we started doing leadership training and entrepreneurship training really for guys who are in the marketplace. So how does it look like for you to be a leader or entrepreneur as you're entering the marketplace? Because again, we had also observed that there was a lot of struggle, that transition between campus and the workplace. You know, you're either jobless, you can't find the right fit, you're wondering, did I take the right course? How does it find expression in the workplace? So there's a lot of confusion in that area. So we said, why don't we just come in and address the leadership issue, but then also try to help people really direct and settle in their path that they need to take in life. And that is how actually Inuka was birthed, with again a vision to raise a generation of transformational leaders and entrepreneurs. And it's been how many years now? 12 years. We started with what we call the Young Leaders Program. And this was again targeted to guys who are transitioning from campus into the working space. And it pivoted as we went on. We started an entrepreneurship program for youth in the lower LSM kind of areas. At some point, we started a leadership program for prefects in high school, because we discovered all these politicians, and I'm sure as you've interviewed most of them, you might have noticed that every story has a story of I was a prefect either in high school or campus or something like that. And so we were like, man, if these are the guys who end up being in our political spaces, they're the ones who end up in KUSA and all these university whatevers and end up being the politicians or captains of industry, then we need to arrest them when they are very formative in their leadership journey in high school and train them. Because remember, like my co-founder Pete was a captain at Dagoretti. And back then in high school, when you're given this prefectdom, you're just given power and you don't know what to do with it. And so it was misconstrued to mean, you're getting the nice meals, you're sleeping in the best bunk. But for us, it's to really go and demystify. Leadership is not about eating the best, you call it top layer. It goes beyond that. So how do we begin to prepare you so that as you begin really settling in into your leadership journey, then we've worked on your leadership foundation. Because as we say in leadership, things don't go wrong, they start wrong. So the things you see showing up in leaders and they've been caught in funny cases is not really something that has started now. It's really a foundational issue. And for us, we are very concerned with how the foundations look like.
Wow, great. How the foundation look like. How has been the journey for you now as co-founders and the leaders? What are things that you learned of yourself or demonstrated to ensure that this platform continues?
The main lesson has been any organization takes after the character and the vision of the leader. And so it is impossible to lead an organization when you've not mastered how to lead self. And part of leading self is, first of all, understanding what makes Joe tick. What do I see as a problem? And how do I see myself as being a unique contributor? All right. And once I can be able to understand that, and part of that is really self-leadership, and it encompasses a lot of other things. And maybe we can have another session to discuss that. Because once I discover that, then I begin to ask myself, what are the atomic habits that I must begin to inculcate for me to live out this? What is my messaging? What are some of the actions I must take? Who must I surround myself with? What are some of the disciplines that I might begin to intake for me to be able actually to excel in this? Then after that, after you're able to lead yourself, then is when you're able to lead a small team. For us, actually, we called our friends. So between me and Pete, we said, okay, who are our friends that we think we can sell this vision to and they can resonate with? And we called a group of actually six guys. So we called them and we said, this is what we are thinking. And by the way, if you've not figured it out yourself, trust me, there's nobody who's going to follow you. And that is why we say, if you think you're a leader and you look back and you see there's nobody following you, then you're probably taking a stroll. Because leadership is about influence. And influence is actually coming to the table and saying, there's this contribution, meaningful contribution I see, I can be able to contribute, and I want you to be part and parcel of this vision. And so it is allowing them to see your thought process and what you think about as a leader. So vision then becomes a very key aspect of leadership. Sell to them an idea of how you can contribute, all right? So this is how I know you, George, and this is why I'm inviting you into my vision, because I think I can benefit by you being a board member. You have eons of years of experience, and I feel that what I'm doing, you can add value to it. So after you get the team, so we gathered a team of six, and that became like our core team. And these guys now become your disciples. You know, it's the 12 like Jesus had. And these are the ones now who continue, you know, some of them have since moved country and they're, you know, like one started, a chapter in Malawi because he had bought into the vision and said, now that I'm moving, I'm going to see how this finds expression there. Somebody else went to London and said, how does this find expression there? So once you begin now to see how that team formation comes about, then now you're able to expand your influence even through people. And so what I've learned is, number one, to be a leader that contributes significantly, you must understand yourself and your vision and be able to lead self. At that point, then you must identify the right people, and this is in form of a team, to be in the bus. And the mistake I see many leaders doing is that sometimes we get the people first and we say, okay, before even we create the bus. And so for me, it's really inverting that pyramid and saying, what is the bus and the structure? Tunatengeneza super metro, okay, now that is the vision. And then we fit the seats and then we ask ourselves, who are the right people to sit on these seats of the bus that we are driving and captaining, right? So it's really inverting and going back to vision, then selling that vision to people. And these people then can run with the vision, even as the Bible says, and other people will be able to just run with it. Yeah, so for me, I've learned in my leadership journey that I'm not responsible for the results. I'm responsible for the people who are responsible for the results. And so a lot of my time as a leader is not spent with, I do a lot of coffees because I'm concerned about if you're part of a key person of my team who have, you know, and of course I've taken you into the bus because I know you have certain competencies. How do I spend a lot of my time working with you, mentoring you? And beyond that, then I know you're going to take care of the results properly. And what I find many leaders doing is we are so much invested in the day-to-day, wanting to see what everybody is doing. You're breathing on their neck, micromanaging. No, you should be working on mentoring them. And that's a model actually which we call transformational leadership, which is what I even researched for my master's thesis. And it says, don't be concerned a lot about the results. Of course, outcomes will come as a result of processes. And these processes will be led by people who your work should be mentoring them. So I guess that's really, in a nutshell, you know, what I've learned through the process.
What's your style of leadership?
So I've already alluded to that. It's what we call transformational leadership, right? And again, transformational leadership is really thinking about, how do I invest and take care of the people who are responsible for the results? And transformational leadership usually has four facets. So all of them, we call them the four I's. All of them start with an I. So number one is intellectual stimulation. So intellectual stimulation is where, as a leader, by engaging with you, George, you ask yourself, by engaging with my team member, do they leave there intellectually stimulated? Like, can they say, what? And yeah, from this session, I feel like I'm driven to do more. I feel like this person is challenging me intellectually. So that is one of the very key components of transformational leadership. And there, of course, you know, it's things about challenging goals and giving them very clear goals, challenging them to get out. You know, it's one of those conversations. One, every time I meet with a team member, I'm telling them, you are meant for much more. You can do better. And they're like, you think I'm able to handle all this? I'm like, yes. So it's really challenging them. And also trying to really point them to a place where they can be able to implement with a lot of innovation and creativity. So that's intellectual stimulation. That's number one. Then number two is idealized influence. I've mentioned, and I think John Maxwell talks about this a lot in his books, that leadership is influence. So we need to be very careful as leaders, because people watch what we do even more than what we say. So again, idealized influence is asking yourself, how can I be at the best influence to the people who look up to me? And always as a leader, and what I caution people is that be very careful that the camera is always rolling. People are looking at you, whether you like it or not. People are looking at how you speak, how you carry yourself, what you post online. And so as a leader, you cannot be reckless, because you're influencing people when you're doing things and even in things you don't do. So that's influence. So are you a role model? Are you embodying the kind of values that you espouse and you want your organization to take after? So number three is inspirational motivation. Motivation is a huge, huge, huge piece in leadership. Again, it goes back to painting a clear vision and saying, so this is where we are, and painting a picture of a preferred future, and then giving them optimism and motivation that, yes, you're the right team to be able to do this. They might not be up to, I mean, they might not be 100%, but there's something that motivation does to actually make somebody feel, I feel valued. And that feeling of being valued actually spurs them towards giving their best towards the organization. So that's inspirational motivation. And the last one is individualized consideration. As a leader, you must know what everybody in your team needs. By the way, you'll be very surprised, George, that some people just want a corner office with their name written on the door. That's all they need. Someone just wants me. I came with a diploma. I want, by the time I'm out of this place, I have a degree. Another person just wants to be talked to nicely. Another one just wants, you know, scale my salary every year by this particular percentage. And so for you is to really individualize consideration talks to the issue that treat everybody as an individual and not as part of a group. So that is why as a leader, in fact, if you look at my calendar, you'll see so many one-on-ones. Because I want to understand, what is it? How does your skill set work in tandem with the vision of the organization? And as you work towards the vision of the organization, how can also the organization work towards building you as a person? Because you won't be here forever. So that is really one-on-ones, trying to understand where are you coming from, mentoring them, if they need training, facilitating that. A lot of empathy, you know, underlies all that, because you have to get where they're coming from. Especially, and allow me to say this, and I actually came out even in one of the meetings I was having in the morning. We are seeing a lot of mental health issues, especially with young workers in the workplace. And I was just trying to ask, what is really the source of this? And the place of individualized consideration must, you know, is the only way you can be able to discover this. Because what is depressing one person might not be what is depressing the other person. Yeah, and so you need to really have a different and unique approach for everyone. So that's my style of leadership, encompassing the four I's: intellectual stimulation, idealized influence, inspirational motivation, and individualized consideration. And that is the philosophy I have for myself. And that also finds expression in the vision of Inuka, which is raising a generation of transformational leaders and entrepreneurs.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. As I see the four eyes, so is the four eyes leadership. That's all,
yes,
I look at, four eyes. All right.
Yes.
So thank you. I mean, you've painted a wonderful picture of what you have done and what's driving Inuka and your role in Inuka.
Mm-hmm.
So for yourself, just looking back, what have been some of the greatest challenges, even as you have established Inuka and built it to where it is today?
Yeah, this is why we get vulnerable and we need to have some tissues around here. You know, and there's a book I love. I don't know if you've read it. It's called The Leadership Pain by Samuel Chand. And it talks about, man, that's one of the greatest leadership resources I have asked my team to read. Because it talks about pain in leadership. And it says there's no leadership journey that is devoid of pain. So if you're not ready to have some pain experiences, please don't be a leader. In fact, there's a meme that was going around some while back. It says, if you're not ready for leadership pain, don't be a leader, go sell ice cream. Because it is guaranteed that once you're a leader, you have to face some pain challenges. And this Leadership Pain book by Samuel Chan really documents, you know, some of the leaders that are great in the world and the ones we know, and they document their pain stories, and they document how they wanted to quit, and they document, you know, some of the things that have really made them bleed and how we can navigate through that. And so for me, two instances really stand out in terms of leadership pain, if I would call it that. Number one is the hard realization that nobody will ever be as passionate about your vision as yourself. And you know, sometimes when you come up with something, you're firing and you're like, yeah, the whole world must experience this. And you go and sell it to your team and have all these goals and outcomes and milestones. But then you discover, man, you had anticipated moving at 80 kph and now you're now moving at 5 kph. Man, there's nothing that kills you like that. And you're like, do I close this thing? Am I the one who's not envisioning them very nicely? You know, and you know, some of it is inadvertent. Like life just happens. Somebody had committed to the vision, but they've moved to another country. Or they've gotten into another season of their lives. They've gotten married and they're no longer as available. And you have to go back to the drawing board. So that really causes a lot of pain. And really understanding that, not allowing that to affect how you treat the vision and even the people you invite into the vision. Because what I found is you can be very resentful. You know, I was talking to a pastor the other day and I was sharing this with them and they told me, hey, Joe, you know, if there are people who understand leadership pain is pastors, because you've invested in a pastor from when they were in, you know, campus, they've come to church, you've trained them, yeah, you did their premarital classes, you wedded them, you did all these things. And one day they leave the church without even, they don't even have the courtesy to say, you know, hi, man, it's a different season or we've moved jobs and we're moving into this church. And you're saying that's painful. So for me, just losing people that you've really invested in me, I think that has been a great source of leadership pain. But I've had really to recalibrate myself and to refocus my thinking towards that and say, hey, life happens. And even to put like some, what we call a social covenant or rules of engagement, that yes, we're in the team, but if you need to transition or you need to do one, two, three things, I think it is good, especially by virtue of the relationship we've created through this individualized consideration to come and say, I feel I need to, you know, I'm growing into a different season and I need to move in this direction. Yeah. So I guess that has been one of them. And then the other one is the pain of lack of growth as you had anticipated it. So you said we'll be in this number of campuses, we will be in Africa. You know, you've even named the organization Inuka Leadership Africa, you know, but you find yourself, you're still in Nairobi for one reason or the other. So that's also a challenge that I've seen. And it's partly, I mean, it's a cocktail of many reasons. And just trying to unpack that and see some of the curative. And part of it, to be very honest, is an issue of funding. Because most of the programs we do is, because we consider ourselves really, we are not for profit. It's more of social impact kind of approach. Yeah? And so sometimes you're depending on donors to be able to facilitate some of the work that you do. And even for the paying clients, you know, I know you'd understand this, George, as a coach. You tell somebody my course on coaching is 300K, they think, can buy some piece of land in Kirinyaga. And actually tied with that, because I've had to do a really, what we call a root cause analysis. And what I've discovered, which affects us, you know, in the career we are in, George, in leadership development and coaching, I think Kenyans don't place a premium on learning. They would rather invest in anything else but growing themselves. And so if you tell them, hey, this course is going to cost you $500,000, they don't see why, how that is value as opposed to buying a piece of land. And for me, part of my work has to been really debunking this mentality and saying, let me tell you, as a testament of myself, my earning capacity has probably compounded by me adding a certificate. I know when I come for a coaching course at BNG, I'm going to increase my earning capacity because I can do a coaching session and earn a 50K. Which probably I would have earned in a month or in 2 weeks, right? So how do we push people to appreciating the place of knowledge and knowledge transfer, you know, either through such courses, leadership development, coaching, mentorship, or even reading books? Somebody once said, you know, this, I mean, if you want to hide money from a Kenyan, hide it in a book, because hey, everybody is concerned about making an extra buck, but nobody's concerned about what do I need to do to invest in myself to make more bucks, because that's the end. I mean, that's the end goal for everybody. Yeah, so just, I think I've had some tension there. And finally, just finding balance between that. Of course, because this majorly, again, social impact, sometimes it doesn't have the resources to sustain you. And so I've really had to also balance that with my accounting practice. And there's such a tension between there. Because I have to be on this side to really, in the corporate world, to make money. And I run also a couple of other entrepreneurship outfits. But, you know, there's always a tension between, you know, you're being called, we need a lot of coaching, mentorship here. And then also, I still need my family to be fed and survive and my kids to go to a good school. Yeah. So off the top of my mind, I think those are the three things that really come out as key.
Thanks. And thank you, Ian, for the recommendation of that book. I'll definitely
get I'm going to send it to you. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thanks for that.
You have a licensed copy, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. I appreciate that. So another thing, yes, you've talked about the challenges. Talk to us about the joys, the things that keep making you go, you know, keep moving. 12 years, what are the things that have inspired you to keep going up until now?
Wow, yeah. I mean, every dark cloud has a silver lining. So definitely there are some great wins. I mean, one of the things, man, I want to share with leaders listening to this podcast is that consistency pays. Do one thing consistently for a long time. I've been at it, despite the challenges, for the last 12 or so years. And what that has done is that it has opened doors for me in spaces I could have never anticipated. Because, I mean, when you go to my LinkedIn, first of all, I've learned to clarify my vision. When you go to my LinkedIn, you'll see. So if you ask me today, who is Joe and what does Joe do? I'll tell you, I help leaders. I help organizations, leaders, and entrepreneurs to connect to their preferred future. That's what I do. So anything that falls in line with that, you will find myself doing that. So people have, over time, come to identify me with that. And they've seen me as that, you know, kind of catalyst between, and coaching, by the way, involves a lot of that. Somebody comes and tells you, this is where I am, this is where I want to go, and you're not giving them answers. You're really trying to invoke something that is already innate within them and helping them connect to where they need to go. So I find myself doing that a lot. And because of that, I've been invited into spaces I don't want to mention to contribute in terms of helping guys think through major organizations. We've done curriculum, because also curriculum is one way to speak into just bridging that gap. We've done curriculums for a lot of organizations. And I can tell you for sure, our work really rides on a lot of referrals. So referral after referral, we find ourselves consulting for government and many other, you know, parastatals, for corporates, banks, etc., etc. But something interesting happened in 2022. So all this culminated into me being invited as a young leader, represent all the young leaders in Africa, to actually speak at the Africa Economic Summit. All right. And again, this was also through a referral. So you can imagine here you're speaking to like captains of industry from across the world. I mean, you know, I got to Cape Town and that booklet was given to me of the speakers who would be speaking. I almost caught the next flight back because I was like, hey, what am I doing here? I almost opted out. But God told me, man, you're here for a reason. And I'm going to guide you. In fact, I had worked on a presentation, but just that night, God just worked on me and told me, you're going to change everything. And this is what you're going to present. And let me tell you, George, I went there and did my 30-minute presentation in front of all these bigwigs, and there was a standing ovation. And after that, you know, all these leaders, you're talking about the most influential woman leader in the UK, we're talking about the founder of the Global Forum for Women Entrepreneurs, they said, we want to engage with you separately. And this opened quite some, I mean, so many doors. I was invited to sit in the board of the Global Forum for Women Entrepreneurs. I'm not the East Africa representative for Unashamedly Ethical. I was invited to sit in the strategic body of Next Move. I don't know if you've heard about it. And we are thinking, how does the youth conversation look like? Especially, you know, and by extension, Movement Day, how do thriving cities across the world look like in 2030? So I found myself to be in very interesting spaces and interesting boards and being invited into interesting conversations. Right now, I have so many board memberships, I'm saying no to others because my plate is already full. But this continued to give me a lot of exposure in terms of meeting new people, traveling to different places, and continuing to learn more about leadership even as I share what I know. So, I mean, and I'm learning best practice and I'm coming back to implement and see what we can do in terms of Inuka. So it's been just great to see how that influence has compounded. It's great to see the young leaders who've gone through Inuka. This is such a highlight. One of the things we do at Inuka, the Young Leaders Program, we put you in a what we call a work group. And every work group has to come with a project that has to go beyond Inuka. One of the projects, there are many projects. I see them on TV every day. This is such a highlight. You know, one of them was an organization formed out of Inuka known as Youth Plus Africa. These are the guys who have done the Nairobi Entrepreneurship Summit and the Youth Plus Summit. You'd remember last year in DEC, they brought VUSI over, and they've been doing quite amazing job. There's a guy who's exporting spinach to China. There's a guy who's in the automobile and is running more than 100 taxis. There's a person who is doing a couple of apps in the technology industry. So many success stories have come out of Inuka. And when I look at these success stories and they mention me or invite me to the lounge, or I see them being featured on different TVs, including some like CNN and BBC, I just smile and say, God has graced me to actually be alive to see, you know, the impact of some of the work we have. Because, I mean, the thing about coaching and training and leadership development, you never realize immediate. It's not a cause and effect. It might take 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, but just the privilege of actually being able to track and see, and somebody actually coming in to tell you, this is what is happening, then that's an amazing thing. And so I think for me, those two highlights, you know, really stand out among many others.
So I'm curious. So what did you say in 2022? Give us, can you remember your key points about the youth in Africa? What did you say that moved the people? Kindly share with us.
Yes. So I talked about the what we call the 3G youth in Africa. And I said, these youth have the grit, they have the guts, and they have the grace. And then I mapped that to the story in the Bible of David. You know, the story of David, I mean, when the issue of facing Goliath comes along, hey, he's the last to be considered, you know, and that is how we treat the young people in this continent. Yet, their ingenuity is crazy. I mean, who would have thought that with a sling and some stones, that is the creativity the youth are bringing to the table. They are bringing, you know, systemic changes and difference in the way we look at things and do things. So we must begin to say, how do we incorporate them and learn from their creativity, bring all this TikTok madness or lack thereof? How do we come up and say, how can we inculcate the grit, the guts? You know, these guys do. I mean, in our parents' generation, they stayed in a job for the entire, my dad was in one job the entire life. But these young people are jumping from different things and they're growing and they're iterating. I mean, there's so much we can learn. The guts to do. They decide to do one thing today, tomorrow they are doing it. You know, for us elder people, we must do business plan, navel gazing before you realize it's 2 years and you've not moved an inch. And so how do we lean in into the youth and really get key lessons that we can implement? And even now in the workplace, there's such a tension between, for the first time, there's a mix between, you know, baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, and now there's a healthy tension because, hey, our two elewani, you know, working together is such a, but for me, one of the contributions I want to make is to say, how do I get into this space in form of, again, training, coaching, mentorship, and make all these generations bring their competencies and learn from each other to make the workplace work. So that's just like a high level summary. And I really challenged them and said, what are we going to do to make sure that in our organizations, in our boards, we're including young people there because they have something to contribute. And by the way, George, isn't it funny that, you know, the biggest demographic in Africa is actually the youth. There is a significant youth bulge. I mean, if we decided to vote in Joe today as president and all youth backed me, we are winning very early in the morning. Then how come parliament is full of, and no offense, and as I said earlier, so that I'm not misconstrued, is and misquoted, it is to say there's a place for older people and elder people to mentor these ones, but how will they be mentored if they're not in the same house? So if you check like the dynamics in our parliament, it's like 90%, you know, and everybody, we were making a joke yesterday in the office, there's a place where they were saying, in a church, and now we want to invite the youth council, and you know, guys came out with the gray hair, and you know, and so how does it find expression in our boards? Does my board have a 20-year-old? Even in church, we have a young pastor who is being mentored, you know, such like things. And I challenge them in, because they are leaders in your organizations, in parliament, as you lead states and all that. Can you make sure there's a place for young people to just contribute and make significant, because they have it. They have it. We just don't trust them. And we think they flare up and, you know, they can't be contained, but let's give them an opportunity.
Just say the 3 G's, I love them. Is the young people have what? I love
they have
strategy.
The grit.
The grit.
Grit is the ability to stick on regardless of the challenges they face.
Mm-hmm.
They have the grit, mm-hmm. right? They yeah. have the guts and yes. they have the grace.
Grace
is to say, man, in the midst of all these emerging issues, mental health, somehow people will still show up to work. and present themselves and say, hey, this is a problem I'm having. I want to go for therapy. I want to improve.
Yeah.
I feel like today in the morning, I was in a coaching session with one of my staff members, and they're telling me, I feel like I have a lot of skill, but my issue is comparing myself with others. You know, I almost want to jump ship because I can see somebody moved into software engineering and they're doing better. You know, so they have the, for the first time actually, and that's also a challenge to parents,
yeah,
that these young ones are leaning in into us. Kitambo, that used to happen a lot. You know, even people didn't have relationships with their parents. But nowadays,
yeah,
even in the brokenness, I mean, children are leaning into parents and they're like, this is what I'm going through. What do you think? And what interventions do you think I can be able to explore? Yeah. So we just need to allow them and give them that space to thrive. Yeah.
Oh, well said. Well said, really, about the youth. And that's something I'd wanted to ask. And you've unfolded it very, very well.
Yeah.
So in terms of your legacy, what are you
Yes.
working towards?
Legacy speaks to, at the end of the day, what will matter? What will people say Joe contributed to? And for me, is to, number one, demystify leadership. Because leadership has been misconstrued to mean many things, titles, that actually leadership can start, you can lead in your silence, you can lead in your own space. Just, I don't know if you've ever been inspired by somebody. You've just walked into maybe a restaurant and you saw somebody sitting there and you just saw how they're dressed and you passed there, you just felt their perfume and how they're taking their coffee and without talking, they just inspired you. You know, that's leadership. They've led you without knowing, without you knowing. And so demystifying what leadership is and inviting young people into the leadership conversation, that would be a win for me. Number two, politics. Let's talk about politics a bit, because unfortunately, the political framework is what is the foundation. I mean, we might do all good things to raise leaders, but if the policies at that national or county level don't align, then, you know, tumekatwa kwa mguu, as we say it in Kenya, like we really, our journey is cut short. And so how do we encourage as many young people to get into the political space where you're the ones promulgating? Unfortunately, George, I don't know if you are part of the Yash Pal guy, these guys who sat at Bomas to make the framers of the constitution. Yeah, probably you are or you are not. But if you are not there, then it means you're subject to a document that you have no control over. If it says do this, you must do it. And so that means that some of the policies being passed don't favor the young people because we don't have young people as part of the people making some of those policies. So how do we get young people into decision-making spaces, both at the national level, at the county level, even within organizations, as I mentioned earlier? And for me, a marker for me, if I can facilitate as many people to enter such spaces so that now we are beginning to see policy that is youth-friendly, then for me, that would be another win. Then I think lastly, and I keep asking this to myself this question, what would matter at the end of the day? And for me, my life mantra is simple. And you'll see it again, pasted across my WhatsApp, whatever, everywhere you see. I even have t-shirts. I say, loving people back to life. At the end of the day, and somebody once said that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That is really the building block of leadership. That was I seen to genuinely care about people? Did I care for people so that they can give me results in my corporate? And if they leave the organization, I no longer care about them. Or did I genuinely love people back to life? Because actually, people are God's best creation. He says, God loves people more than anything. And if God, in fact, it's like God telling you today, I love that car that you drive, George. And then you go misuse it. I mean, if God places such a high premium on something, who am I to downplay it or to look at it in any other way? And so for me, I keep saying, my work, if I don't do anything else, is to love people back to life and to tell them you're valued, you're loved, and you have something to contribute. And now opening up the pathways for them to be able to contribute.
I say amen to that. That's a real good mantra. No, amazing. And so
amen.
True. So true. So true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. So somebody listening to your leadership story, which you have articulated so well, what can you say is the moral of your leadership story?
Number one, the moral, I think, would be, again, just continuing with what I was saying earlier, is value people. Don't use people. Value people, because if you don't value people, then you'll never see why you need to invest in their growth. So number one is valuing people. Then number two is creating systems and structures that enable the growth of people. Now, this is interesting because this is another leadership framework, which is known as adaptive leadership. So adaptive leadership talks about how do I create an environment that enables growth for everybody who gets into that environment. That's the thing. That's the moral. Don't be concerned with the nitty-gritties. If you sort these two at this level, these are the ones sort themselves. You know, it's a ripple effect. If you're a transformational leader and you work on this adaptive leadership, then success is guaranteed. And how does this adaptive leadership look like? Number one, and this is a very, in fact, this is an interesting leadership concept I'd like guys to learn. As a leader, we say, you must be in the dance floor. So you're in the fields, uko uko, you're dancing with the people, so you know how it is to dance with the people. You also know how hot it is in the dance floor. But occasionally and frequently as a leader, you must retreat to the balcony and have a balcony view and look at the dance floor and see, okay, so this is how people look at us, you know, when we are dancing. And from that point, you can be able to have a point of clarity and know, what do I need to change? Or to create an enabling environment. That's what we call it. And that's what adaptive leadership is all about. You know, and from the balcony, then you can be able to diagnose and see, hey, those are the issues that we are seeing there. And from there, you can be able to come up with steps of number one, managing, and you enter something now called change management. And change, of course, comes with a lot of distress. So how do you manage distress through that change? And how do I also maintain discipline as we go through those change processes, all right? And so after you figure that out, then you send people back to the dance floor, dance with them again, and go back to the balcony, and it becomes a cyclic kind of process. So that's what adaptive leadership is all about. And so I don't know if that's a good moral, but I just felt that we should throw it in there. Yeah.
Wow. Thanks, man. Really nice conversation talking about your journey, and I really do appreciate that. So any final comments before we say goodbye?
Final comments is just to say, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I mean, you're a leader I've looked up to for many years. You've played a part. I mean, we've met with you for a coaching session. You've enriched my journey in one way or another through a physical interaction and through also many of your podcasts and writings that you put out there. So for me, it's just to encourage you and to say, keep going. We see what you're doing and we're cheering you on. And to say that continue being, you know, such an impactful contributor in this leadership space. And then number two is just to say that leadership is not a reserve for a few. Remember, I mentioned earlier about everybody being a leader, and leadership starting at a self level is starting from small things. Do you keep promises to yourself? Mm-hmm. If you tell yourself you will be waking up at this time, do you even make your bed? Like, it really must boil down to the very nitty-gritty things. And if we can demystify leadership to be that, then everybody will begin to look at themselves as a leader. And lastly, there's this book called Atomic Habits, you know, and it talks about the process. An atom is the smallest form of, you know, anything. And it says, and, you know, sometimes we have big dreams. And I don't know if you've ever looked at your to-do list. It happens to me, you know, once in a while. You look at your to-do list, you're so overwhelmed, you say, huh, let me just go for a ride. You know, you end up doing nothing, you know. But for me, it's to say, come up with a clear goal and come up with atomic habits, you know, that then will build up. You know, success is not an event, it is a journey. And if you begin to look at it that way, Rome was not built in a day. So allow yourself, be gracious to yourself to walk through the journey, but just make sure that every day you've made a step. Don't be stagnant. I think we're just cautioning people against not taking any step. So take a step every day. There's that concept known as the aggregation of marginal gains. Have marginal gains every day. Make a step towards your preferred future. Regardless of your situation, every day as you assess your day, ask yourself, what did I do today to add up to the to build up to the preferred future that I envision for myself? So let's keep moving. Let's keep growing. The Bible says that anything that is not growing is dying. And so please don't be a dead man walking. Make sure you're growing every day and you're moving significantly towards your preferred future. Thank you, George.
Thank you so much, and wishing you success even as you continue leading courageously.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.